KALW.
We normally would provide showers, we provide free clothing, we have a medical van come once a week. 100% of it is totally eliminated for now.
What does the quarantine mean for people who are homeless and need a meal?
You know, I could go to the grocery store and get food for the next 3 weeks. That is absolutely never an option for someone who is living out on the street.
We'll hear how a soup kitchen is adjusting to the shelter-in-place order. Then, how is the coronavirus affecting Australia?
There's security guards at the supermarket where they haven't been before. Like, that's just never been a thing.
A check-in from Down Under, and how to make a wet burrito if you're stuck in a prison cell.
Bust the bag open, put it in the bowl, flatten it on down, and just add some mayo, cheese, hot sauce to it, and whatever meat, pork rind, chips.
That's coming up. I'm Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Walter Peranto and his housemates run an all-volunteer soup kitchen in San Francisco's Mission District. Their goal is to provide hospitality to anyone who walks through their door. Like most organizations, the soup kitchen has had to adjust to the coronavirus. They've never tracked the number of people they serve, but in recent weeks, they've been making 50% more food than normal. A week into the Bay Area's shelter-in-place order, Walter talked about the changes and what this crisis means for the people he serves who are already living on the margins of our society.
All right. Good morning. Today is day. To be honest, I don't know what day it is in the quarantine log. The city's been shut down for a week or so. But at the soup kitchen where I work, we changed our operations dramatically, probably 3 weeks ago, give or take, and ramping up changes weekly, daily, as we had new information. We normally would provide showers. We provide free clothing once a week. We have a medical van come once a week. And all of that, like 100% of it, is totally eliminated for now. There's a bus stop right outside our establishment. And when the bus stops, like as many as 10 guests might get off the bus to come to us. I know that our guests, many have compromised immune systems. Many are elderly. You know, they're on this public bus that has all these bars that are holding onto and seats are hard plastic seats they're sitting in. And they're all commingling and they're coming to get this essential service. Many of them don't have a way to get food otherwise. So it's honestly tragic to me that they have to ride this to come get food when, you know, obviously many others don't have to head out daily to get their food. When you eat at a soup kitchen, you can't shop for a week. You can't pick up 21 meals and bring them to your refrigerator. You have to come every day. You have to come every meal. You know, I could go to the grocery store and get food for the next 3 weeks. That is absolutely never an option for someone who is living out on the street. Every day you have to search for food. What I miss most is being able to interact with the guests that we serve. And it's especially hard because our guests are, many of them are our friends, and some of them I would even consider my family. And now I can't touch them or hug them, or I even feel like I have to temper my excitement to see them because I want to encourage them to head out. And it's hard because if I'm like, hey, it's so good to see you, then it invites them to begin a conversation. And what I need is for them to leave. What I miss most is, like, I almost want to say, like, being human with the people we serve. And what I'm grateful for is how well the group of us that are left behind at the soup kitchen, how well we're working together. You know, we live together and we work together, and that's a lot of opportunity for disagreement and hard feelings. And I feel like in a way, we're in a golden age right now where all of that is put to the side and we just have to work and we have to do what we're doing. And we've been getting along very well. Honestly, what I'm worried about is things are going to go back to normal prematurely. And I'm worried about knowing when to relax our new policies. And I'm worried about beginning to go back to providing more services and then having to clamp down again. Or I'm worried about opening our soup kitchen up again where people can come inside and sit down and eat in the dining room and then, you know, the disease not actually being eradicated and it spreading through the population. And it's going to be dangerous, honestly. That's what I think.
That piece was produced by Joshua Sorotiak, who is a student in KALW's Audio Academy training program. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. This week, we're going to be checking in with some reporters from around the world to learn more about the effect coronavirus has had on people globally. And the reporters we're talking to, well, they have something in common. They are or were affiliated with KALW. We'll start today with Emma Nobel, an Australian reporter who spent a summer here in the KALW newsroom with us. Now, Australia has a population of about 25.5 million people. That's half the population of California. As of today, there are more than 5,700 cases of confirmed COVID-19. I called up Emma on Skype to ask how Australia's coping with the crisis. About when did this start really picking up for where you are for Australia as a news item for you to cover?
I think it wasn't until really late. You know, it was around, I think, February was when we were really starting to sort of take notice of it. I think in January, you know, because of the summer that we've had with the bushfires, that was still what we were really kind of focusing on. And this COVID-19 thing seemed like something on the really far distant horizon. You know, it was somewhere in China. We weren't really sure what it was. And then it started going out from China, and then, you know, it started going into Europe. And suddenly it seemed like this thing that was so far on the horizon was right here with us, and actually the bushfires were going to pale in comparison. But again, like, we've been so late to the party because, you know, up until a few weeks ago, we were seeing these incredible scenes on Bondi Beach in Sydney where people were sunbathing. This was on March 21st, I think, that weekend. You know, people were sunbathing and swimming, and it seemed like they were without a care in the world. And that was just a few weeks ago. And I think that everyone came down pretty hard on that afterwards to be like, no, this isn't just like something that you can just kind of go on holiday from. Like, it's really serious and it's everyone's responsibility.
I'm wondering, what kind of directives had you had in your state, but also for the rest of the country?
So the directives have been so all over the place. It's been so confusing and just so strange, you know, how quickly things have changed. Like, I never thought that people would be fighting over toilet paper in the supermarket, but...
Oh, you have that too, huh?
Yeah. You guys have had it too in the Bay Area?
Oh, yes. It's everywhere. The hoarding.
Yeah, the hoarding. So now, you know, they're really strictly limiting, you know, how much, you know, things like rice, pasta, anything canned, tomatoes or beans that you can sort of take. There's security guards at the supermarket where they haven't been before. Like, that's just never been a thing. Like, sometimes they'll patrol the aisles. I haven't been to the supermarket, though, actually. I haven't left the house in, I think, 8 days now. There was one other thing I wanted to mention, too, just about, just to give you a sense of how confused people are here. And I think it was last weekend that, you know, the Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, he was talking about how the rules were going to be tightened. And, you know, then we were given the 4 acceptable reasons to leave the house. And there were really strict rules on how many people could meet up together and what a family kind of looks like in terms of, say, if a family was split between 2 houses, you're allowed to see each other, but did a boyfriend or girlfriend count as family? Like, say you're with a partner, but you're not living together yet. Like, what do you do? People had a lot of questions about that. So on Monday, so that was on the weekend, we heard that from our Prime Minister. On Monday, we had the Victorian Premier saying that having friends over for dinner, you know, if you do that and they're not members of your house, it's breaking the law. And then we had on Tuesday, we had our police minister tweeting that you cannot visit your partner for social reasons, which people were really shocked about. And then there was a bit of an outcry, you know. And then on Wednesday afternoon, we had the chief health officer, and all of this is playing out on Twitter. And then on Wednesday, there was a complete backflip. The chief health officer said that partners not living together could actually see each other, you know, and that they were making an exemption and they hope that that helps. So now if you've got a partner, you can visit them, but you shouldn't apparently get close to them. So that means that you're not allowed to physically touch. Just like, how are they going to police it? Like, is the police minister going to be watching from some window?
Oh, goodness. Oh, Emma. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for having me. And keep safe, okay?
You too.
Thanks, Anand.
Emma Nobel is an Australian reporter who spent a summer working with us in the KELW newsroom. She spoke to me from Ballarat, Australia. Find a link to her stories at kalw.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Henat Baba. Next up, a story from the Uncuffed team at Solano State Prison in Vacaville.
This is Uncuffed.
Stories from Solano State Prison.
This story comes to us from Uncuffed producer Maito Guzman.
As a little boy, Dwayne Locklear had an experience that sparked a special interest and new appreciation between he and food, such that years later, this became a passion that led Dwayne to ultimately becoming a gourmet in prison cuisine and creating dishes that would challenge what you thought was possible using only prison-issued items.
Well, we're going to be talking about food today, right?
Right.
And I know you have a special interest in food. Can you tell us a little bit about where that came from, how that began for you?
Well, it all began probably when I was like 12, 13. My run-ins with the law caused my dad to give me some kind of punishment. Well, what I thought was punishment. So he pulls up to the house in a truck full of topsoil, has me start taking it off the truck bucket at a time. And I hated it. I didn't understand what he was doing. But slowly but surely, over the summer, we built us a garden in our backyard. We had lettuce, we had spinach, okra, corn, carrots, tomatoes. We had just about anything you would go to the store to buy.
Do you remember what you guys did with your vegetables as far as what you used them or how you went from there?
My dad's the famous sauteed zucchini and squash. Couldn't stand that shit. But fried okra, I'm at the table. I'm at the table right there.
So those vegetables that you worked at, they ended up becoming meals.
I had a thing for spinach. Put butter in the pan and put some spinach in there and it shrinks on down. Salt and pepper, and it was like, I thought I was Popeye. So I started experimenting when no one else was around. Then I started branching out, watching the cooking shows and Food Network and Essence of Emerald. And my passion for food just really exploded. You know, I'm famous for my ribs. Everybody loves my ribs. Even my dad loves my ribs. He said, you're a Locklear then. But I'm not a Locklear any other time. Only when I cook some ribs. But that's all right. That's all right with me. I take it as it comes.
That's cool.
That's where my love for food originally came from. But it wasn't until I got my own place with my wife and kids that I had to realize, like, somebody has to cook. But when it comes to jailhouse food, I guess you can say just bringing that mindset of wanting to cook with me. You know, we only get so much on these canteen lists, but I just try to make the best of what we can do of what we got. And I'm a fat boy, so I gotta eat. A commercial comes on right now and it makes my mouth water, Taco Bell Crunch Wraps or Mexican pizza or whatever. Jalapeno burger from Carl's Jr. I'm gonna look at that commercial and I'm gonna see which way I can get me the certain ingredients and I'm gonna make that.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what was your inspiration on some of your dishes? And so it could really come from anywhere, huh?
It either comes from TV or staring at a certain item too long in the sale. I can tell you right now, my next thing on my list is chili.
So it's begging you yeah, to create a route for me to become amazing, huh?
Man, if I look at the chili and then I'm looking over here, I got tomatoes over here by the window and onions and jalapenos. And I seen a commercial and it has... No, it wasn't commercial. I think it was Kelly and Ryan were making chili. And I was like, man, I can make chili like that. So, you know, that's what's been in the back of my mind for the last week, I swear. 7 whole days I've been staring at that chili.
So it sounds like that recipe is marinating.
It's
coming together. Now, you document the recipes that you create.
Yeah.
And you've been at this for a minute now, right?
Yeah, I got me a little recipe book. It has about at least 200. I'm being kind of modest. I'm staring right here at buttered mushrooms and oyster burrito. Yeah, I just ordered some shiitake mushrooms from the package, you know, oysters, onion, tomato out the kitchen, tortillas from the store, salt and pepper, the Saison Caribbean seasoning. I use that a lot in my rosemary. Those are my rosemary. That's something I bring from the streets. That's my special ingredient. Ribs, rosemary. Chicken, rosemary. Rosemary, rosemary.
Now, when you show up to a facility, do you find yourself evaluating their kitchen, their menu? Does it vary from facility to facility that what you do?
Yeah, man. As soon as I touch down, I need to find out what's on the canteen. I think I spend most of my free time making package lists and canteen lists that I probably never even gonna get. But when it does come time to go to the store, I'm ready. I got 4 or 5 lists on hand and spare the moment.
So you have grocery lists prepared.
Yeah.
So it's not a I'm going to canteen. It's a I got a vision for what I'm doing and I got needs for certain ingredients.
Yeah.
And you got all that pre-planned. Tell us about one of your more popular dishes or one of your personal favorites.
So everybody's in love with my wet burritos. I got a steak cup, right, hard time mug, and I tie a trash bag in it, little baby trash bag, no holes, one on each side. Slide 2 tortillas in there and fill it with a mixture of rice, beans, and some soup. And add water in it. I cook the burrito in the bag, which makes the burrito considered wet because the tortillas, everything gets cooked with the hot boiling water. Then I bust the bag open, put it in the bowl, flatten it on down, and just add some mayo, cheese, hot sauce to it, and whatever meat, pork rind, chips combination right on top. And serve it like that.
And as you've been putting together these recipes, I know you have a plan. Can you share with us a little bit about your ideas about where you're going with this?
Well, my hopes, goals, and dreams is to get out. I like to share my recipe book with my fellow prisoners in the package catalog, as well as the curious audience of the world. You know, Insane Prison Spreads. Publish it. If you wanted to teach your kid how to cook, this would be the easiest way to do it. It'd be cost effective, it'd be cheap, it'd be easy, and you know, altogether it's creative.
The appreciation that your father had from growing the food to the cooking, do you think that carried over into your life?
Most definitely. It was a major thing he showed me because I can feed myself.
That was Maito Guzman speaking with Dwayne Locklear. Maito produced that story as a student in KALW's radio program at Solano State Prison. Our work in prisons is supported by the California Arts Council and the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. The producers fact-check content to the best of their ability. All content is approved by an information officer. You can listen to more stories from Uncuffed at our website, kalw.org/uncuffed. Today's Cross Currents team includes Sona Avakian, Janae Darden, Christopher Agusa, True Gwynn, Marissa Ortega-Welch, Jessica Placek, Andrew Stelzer, and Eli Wertschafter. Our engineers are James Rollins, Tariq Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shirin Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.